Hi, this is Irene Watson. I'm managing editor of Reader Views.
And I'm Victor Volkman from Loving Healing Press. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We're speaking to you today live from Ann Arbor, Michigan and Austin, Texas on InternetVoicesRadio.com. You can hear us every Thursday at 8 p.m., more or less, Eastern Daylight Time on this station. Today's topic is Organization Matters, and our special guest will be joining us this hour is Bill Cooper of LeadingBeyondTradition.com. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is AuthorsAccess.com. If you want to participate in today's show, you can send us an email to info@AuthorsAccess.com, and we'll read your questions and comments over the air. Before we get started this evening, I would like to remind all our listeners that Reader Views and Loving Healing Press are sponsoring a short story writing contest. To get more information about this, go to www.lovinghealing.com and click on Writing Contest. Tonight, Bill will share us secrets of the all-important art of staying organized during the book development process. Starting with why he wanted to write his book, he'll take us on a journey of how he navigated the maze of the world that is publishing for the first-time author. Specifically, he'll talk about the nuts and bolts of writing and rewriting, dealing with ISBNs, copyrights, barcodes, and all the other minutiae that go into a book, developing the cover, successful marketing strategies, including getting speaking engagements, and finding a commitment to get it all done. Now, Bill Cooper has nearly 30 years of experience in policing and is a former chief of police. He's also a Motorola-trained Six Sigma black belt and teaches graduate school MBA courses. Wow, that's quite a resume. And now we're going to this week's special guest, Bill Cooper. Hello and good evening, Bill.
Good evening to both you and Irene, and thanks for the opportunity to chat for a second. I wanted to take just a minute of the time and talk about how I got to the book. The reason for the book came about when I was the chief. I was the municipal police chief, and of course we're responsible for keeping the quality of life and the safety of the community. And our mission dictates how we operate. And of the 18,000 police departments in the United States, most of them operate in the same fashion. And each of us, every year during the budget preparation time, finds ourselves asking for more and more resources in order to keep up with the demand. Growing populations bring growing activity levels for the police. That typically requires additional resources. So every year at budget time, we would go and we would ask for additional resources in the form of personnel, staffing, in the form of additional dollars for equipment. Typically, the local government, the city council, the mayor, would come back to us and say of all the priorities, all the departments that they had to fund, that there wasn't enough money for everybody. Consequently, and it's largely driven by the economy in some circumstances, we would find that the local government would come back to us and say, we don't have the money. And every year we would repeat the cycle trying to justify additional resources. And when the city would come back and say, we don't have enough money, our typical response would be, then we're going to have to cut services. And so every year we would go and do this. And it got to the point where my second-in-command and I sat down one year after we were told there was no more money, and we said, we need to rethink what we're doing. We need to take a look at what we're doing and rethink policing totally. So we did. We actually did a complete, comprehensive study of policing, not only for our department, but for policing in general. And we found that looking at two different metrics, the outcomes were quite interesting. One of those was 911 calls, people calling in on 911 lines. 911 came about in the late 70s, early 80s to build a standardized, simplistic system to get you emergency help in a shorter amount of time. What's happened over the years is as 911 has evolved, we looked at what percentage of the calls coming in on 911 lines actually are related to emergency circumstances. And we found, dependent on your jurisdiction, that anywhere from 10 to 20% are actually emergent circumstances, and the rest of it are not. The other metric we looked at was calls for service, that police officers in the field are actually dispatched to. The activity levels will vary from department to department, but the outcomes typically are the same. And we found that roughly 50 to 70% of the calls, dependent on jurisdiction, that the officers are going to have no relationship to the mission of policing. So in a nutshell, what we found we were doing was we were creating the world where no matter what your problem is, push three buttons on a box and somebody else will deal with it for you. And we began to rethink policing. We began to look at our own processes. We began to look at systems improvements. We began to look at deployment strategies and community policing strategies. And I wound up going back to my graduate school days where I learned business principles in the MBA program and said, we need to start applying business principles to policing. I looked at New York City's police department. When Rudy Giuliani got elected mayor, he brought in a fellow named Bill Bratton as the commissioner of NYPD. Chief Bratton created what's called in the law enforcement world now as CompStat, computer statistics. With that, he was using data to deploy, data to drive results, and he built an accountability system around getting those results. As a consequence, within a very short period of time, within a couple of years, he drove New York City's crime rate down. New York City in the mid-90s was deemed by then Mayor Dinkins as ungovernable. Yet with this philosophy and methodology, Commissioner Bratton drove crime down in some cases in the 50% range and made New York City safer. We applied that philosophy in our department and it worked. But we also began to look at our own processes. We began to look at our own systems. And we found that we were attacking a lot of the problems like a Band-Aid approach. We were attacking symptoms of problems rather than the root cause. So I began to look for a root cause analysis system. And my second in command gave me a book she had read about the Six Sigma methodology. That methodology came about in the mid-80s in the Motorola company, premised on producing defective products. And this was a systems approach to improving the process by which those products got fixed. Motorola had great success. General Electric under Jack Welch picked it up. So we looked at that as well. And we found that in the private sector, the Six Sigma methodology had such huge success. For example, in the last 10 years, the Fortune 500 companies that have deployed it have cut internal costs and increased their profits by $100 billion. And so we began to look at our own systems, our own processes, and we began to recognize that there isn't any system or process out there that couldn't be improved. And at the end of the day, what we found was that we could enhance our own operations so dramatically that we would free up enough resources through these improvements that we didn't actually have to go back and ask for more money or more personnel to meet the demand. The other part of that, of course, the final part, was bringing the community into a real partnership with the police department, and we found that to be very successful because the general public in America are wonderful, decent people who will help you if you just ask them. And so when we put this model in place and I wanted to present it to the city council, I wrote a paper describing it. And as I wrote the paper, I found there's a foundation for a book here. And the results that are based on this model could be so enormous that it would save the taxpayers billions of dollars, reduce crime, and produce partnerships unlike anything we'd ever seen. So I wrote the paper, gave it to the city council, and it worked. And that began the evolution of how the idea for the book came into fruition. And when I actually sat down to write the book, that's where I ran into trouble.
Wow, that's quite an interesting story. How you were actually had a project to work with, and then all of a sudden, this project turns out into a book that will help a lot of other people. This is really incredible. You had talked, Bill, about using an accountability system, not only for the police system, but I'm sure that can transform into writing a book. Would you expand a bit on how people can actually use an accountability system when writing their book?
Absolutely. And everything that I talk about, how my book was developed, I learned how not to do it and then reinvent how to do it right. So you're speaking to a wizard on how not to write a book. And when I sat down to write my book, I thought that having done no research on how to write a book, that I had this about 15-page paper, I would sit down and expand on the paper. So I sat at the computer and started writing the book. The first mistake I made was not having a plan. And the frustration that I began to see very quickly was I had no system. I was trying to write the book from front to back. And what I do when I turn the computer on is I would scroll down through the existing material, see something that I wanted to change, and all I was doing was changing and recycling the same material over and over again and not adding to anything. The frustration got to the point where I said, I'm not going to do this. And I actually walked away from it for a while because I had no accountability for myself. And I sat down with my wife and we discussed, okay, how are we going to do this? And so we designed a systems approach premised on our own personal accountability on how I would write this book, how I would put it together, how we would go about getting the end product. And I discovered through actually doing some research on book writing and wound up purchasing a fellow named Dan Pointer. He has a book on self-publishing, and it's exactly on how to put a book together and how to get it published. So I bought that book, and I learned a great deal from it on how to approach putting the book together from beginning to end systematically and having success. But it was driven by personal accountability. It was driven by my ability to sit down and design a system that I could work with that would produce the book. And that's what we did, is we put a systems approach to this, which I'm happy to describe on how we did it. But we really learned the hard way with this, and then once we did the research on how to write it, it went really smoothly after that.
Sometimes it really, that's how we learn, is finding first the hard way to do it and realizing, like you say, is how not to do it. And from that gives us the experience of what we really do want to do. And yes, so please do give us a brief overview on what your systems approach is.
What I did was I had to decide what I actually wanted in the book. That came down in the form of the number of chapters that I wanted to write. I decided on that. What were the chapters' contents going to be? So what I did is I decided on about 12 or 13 chapters. And what I would do is I put a file folder out for each chapter. The research that I did and the data that I amassed on that given chapter went into that file folder. So when I had the data for all the chapters in the book, what I found was I needed a quick win. And so what I did was I picked a very easy chapter to write, and it didn't matter where in the book it was going to be. And the one I picked actually turned out to be in the middle of the book, because from an attitudinal perspective, I needed a quick win to get myself back in the attitude of finishing the book. I sat down and I wrote the chapter, and it actually went very quickly. And then I picked another one, I wrote another one, and then another, and another, and I actually wound up saving the longest, hardest chapters for last. And by the time I had gotten to those, I found that I was in such a good attitude and such a good system that the writing went very well, and it went actually very quick. And when I had the chapters, the draft chapters put together, then I took those chapters and organized them in the manner that I wanted them to appear in the book. So we then had the draft manuscript for the book. And, of course, that then drives the need to have it edited. I had originally had a publisher that was interested in the book, and as the book evolved, I would send out a chapter or two for review. We got pretty good reviews, and then when it came time to actually sit down and talk about the business of getting published, is I found that I didn't particularly like the outcome of the publisher. And so I decided to change and self-publish. And I thought that that would be the way to go. And I, of course, found out that that isn't altogether a very simple process either, but we worked our way through it in terms of all of the copywriting, all of the numbers, all of the material that actually has to go into producing the final book. Before you can do that, though, the book content has to be edited and organized in such a fashion that it becomes a book. So it has to be formatted, it has to be organized, and certainly has to be edited. And if your readers can take one thing away, get a number of people to edit this. Don't self-edit it, because you get so familiar with the material, you wind up missing huge problems in it. And so we wound up with half a dozen really good people to edit the book, and they found a lot of problems, and we were able to come back very quickly and fix those.
Well, that's a very interesting way of organizing nonfiction writing, and I think that sounds like a really cool way to go. I hear you say the word we. Do you actually have a team of people helping you with this project? And if so, how do you kind of assign the responsibilities?
Actually, there was a team. It was I wrote the book. My wife was the initial editor on it, and that's when the 55-gallon drum of red ink came out originally. She actually is very good at it, and so she did the initial run on all the editing and helped with the organizing and formatting of the book. And so us sitting here collectively, as opposed to the frustration we were experiencing trying to get the thing done, we now had it done, and all we had to do was fine-tune it. The other part of our team, and the benefit of having great daughters, is my youngest daughter's a graphic designer.
Oh.
So we tasked her with designing a cover and certainly the content of the cover, because one of the things we learned and did wrong, actually, was great authors will tell you that you should design your cover and the content of the cover first, because the back cover will give you essentially the outline and the theme of your book, and that's what you work from. I didn't do that. I wished I had, and actually I'm writing another book, and I am doing that, and it works. So the back content is huge, because you learn from the research that the majority of people buying books will pull it off the shelf, and they'll look at the front cover for a few seconds, and if the front cover is interesting enough to them, they'll turn it over and go to the back cover. The back cover will sell the book. So your organization on the back cover and the content of the back cover should be driven at marketing the content of the book, a headline, some bullet points, some testimonials, and certainly the genre of the book and the price go on there as well. So we wound up, my daughter did a tremendous job designing the book cover, and that was essentially our team.
Great. What's the biggest surprise or unexpected lesson learned when you shifted from, you know, being the author client of a publisher to running the whole ball of wax yourself?
The surprise was the complexity of the initial engagement of self-publishing. I thought that we would send a couple of copies to the Library of Congress with our copywriting fee. We would get registered. The copyright would be registered. We would then find a book printer. Have the book printed. We, of course, had built a marketing strategy, and so we would get the books, we would market them, and success would be there. We found pretty quickly that's not exactly the way it works. And if you're going to self-publish, and I truly encourage it, that there is a methodology that needs to be followed there as well. Because not only do you need to register your copyright, but you need to understand that once you register with the Library of Congress, it will take them months to give you your copyright number. The mistake we made was we were ready to go to the printer, and then we sent the copyright in, and so we were faced with, okay, do we go to print and not put the copyright number in there, or do we wait 6 months for the Library of Congress to come back and hold off printing? Well, we had orders for the book, so we went ahead without it. So that was one issue. The other must-haves in your book that you need to strategize right up front are getting an ISBN number, International Book Standards number, a SAN number, standard addressing number, and a Library of Congress control number. And there are fees associated with those. There is an order by which you should follow getting those. Those go in your book, and they must go in your book, or libraries, bookstores, colleges will not look at your book. So we had to learn about how we went to do that. Then you have to have your ISBN number and your price barcoded. So we had to find out about barcoding, how to do it, what we needed, and put that all in place. And the next big surprise, actually the final big surprise, was book printing. We had built this book in Microsoft Word, and with the version of Word 2003 is once a book is formatted the way you want it to appear, choosing the right font, the right size font, how your graphics are going to go, then you are going to paginate your book, and the way typically books are laid out is in the upper left, you'll have the title of the book and the page number, and then on the right side page, on the right justified, you'll have the chapter title and the page number. And so we did all of that, but that version of Word does not paginate, so we had to do it one page at a time, and we've got 200 pages in the book, so we did that. We then sent a request for qualifications out to the top 30 book printers in the country, and followed the format set out by Mr. Poynter, and we actually got 26 bids back. So with all these bids, then we had to sit down and figure out which one we were going to use. So what we did is we built a matrix. What are the outcomes we wanted? What is the pricing structure we want to see? There's a whole number of things that we built around this matrix that allowed us to score it and select our book printer. Once we did that, we sent the manuscript off, and the book printer immediately sent it back and said, no book printer publishes from Word or Word Perfect. It has to be typically in PDF. So we had to convert it to PDF, and what we found that is in your formatting, once you convert to PDF, it tweaks the pages just enough to drop the bottom line of your formatting onto the next page, which throws off your pagination. And so we wound up having to go back through and reformat the whole book. We sent it off to the book printer. They then send you what's called a blue line, which is the final ability for you to make any corrections you're going to make, and you're done, which is what we did. So there was huge frustration in this, but at the end of the day, when the book showed up, it was worth every second of it.
It's interesting how, you know, we can go through all these steps and all the frustrations, but the end result is really something to be proud of. And as I'm listening to you, you're certainly talking about accountability and commitment. And I want you to explain to us how you were able to really keep in that commitment with all the frustrations that were happening, all the roadblocks, all the hurdles that you go through. There was still, I'm hearing, a sense of commitment. Tell us how you were able to keep that focus.
We did it, and actually when I wrote the book, when the manuscript was done and we had gotten it done, we had gotten it converted to PDF, we were headed to the printer, is we felt a huge sense of accomplishment. When the book actually showed up here, and in the cases of books actually showed up here, and you open it up and take a look at your work, the outcome is huge. The sense of accomplishment is huge. When you talk about commitment, it's absolutely critical. If your listeners are actually going to sit down and write a book, take a systems approach, but have the attitude that you're not going to write the book and get it published, printed, and back in your house for distribution in a week. It isn't going to happen in a month. There has to be some sort of an attitudinal commitment that this is going to take a little bit of time. What we found was the easiest part of the book was writing it. Once we got the system in place, is I was able to put pen to paper, fingers to keyboard, and have the manuscript done in just a few weeks. And I was working at it a little bit here, a little bit there. So it went very quickly, and that alone as a commitment was huge from an attitude perspective, is we were winning. I was getting the book done. I was seeing results. I was seeing accomplishments. And by starting with the simpler aspects of it and working up, you were able to make that attitude shift to, I'm doing it. I'm getting it done. There's a product here. And then by the time you got to the higher end chapters, the more complex chapters, it was easier to get to those. It was easier to actually produce those because you had already accomplished a larger percentage of what you set out to do. And when you sat down with all of those chapters and began to organize those, you put all the pieces out there and you began to organize that into a book, it was huge. It was so huge. I was so happy. I was so proud. And then, of course, we had to go through the fairly interesting morass of getting printed and published. But by the time we actually got to those fairly frustrating things, it was a win. We already had won. And so we knew that the hurdles were going to be overcome. We knew that we were going to have a book at the end of it. And so the further into this your writers go, the easier it actually gets. But understand that it does take an attitude, that it's going to take some time, and that you have to commit to doing this. But at the end of it, I'll tell you, there's no feeling like it. Having that book, you have become a legacy. You have become an expert. You have become a published author. You have become something that is really meaningful. And so if people got the commitment, the win is huge. It's huge.
Great. I'd just like to remind people that they're listening to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Today's topic is organization matters, and our special guest this hour is Bill Cooper of leadingbeyondtradition.com. If you have a brief question, you can email us to info@authorsaccess.com, and we'll put your question on the air. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views and Loving Healing Press.
Bill, I want to just backtrack a little bit to your introduction. You were talking about where this book really started, and you mentioned business principles. And I also, as an author, believe that we really need to use a lot of business principles in publishing a book. We may think that we can only, as you say, do the writing, which at the time we're writing doesn't seem to be the easiest thing, but as in the end, writing is the easiest. Now, just let's go into business principles. Which significant business principles do you feel are the most important when publishing a book?
If you look at, we'll start with management. Certainly you are at a management level when you write. You have to manage your time. You have to manage your resources. You have to manage your schedule. You have to manage the output that you're putting together. So from a management level perspective, you're responsible for that. You are accountable at the end of this for what is produced or isn't. So you're managing those elements of it. You have to look at finances. Finances are critical. If you self-publish, it isn't going to be free. You have costs associated with producing the book. There are costs associated with copywriting and obtaining the ISBN number, the SAN number, the Library of Congress control. There are costs. There are costs associated with barcoding. There are costs associated with printing the book, and certainly there are costs associated with distribution and marketing. So from a management level perspective, if you sit down and decide to write a book, understand and plan for those things. So there's the third element, is planning, because it just doesn't come by osmosis. And please take it from somebody who learned the difficult way on putting the book together, is you have to have a strategy. You have to have a plan. So when you look at it from a management level, you are actually applying management principles, business principles associated with finance, business principles associated with marketing and distribution. And if you don't have a plan, you'll find it to be very, very frustrating. And a lot of people will walk away from it, and they shouldn't, because everybody out here has a book in them. Everybody has a story. And there's a lot of books that come out, and there's a lot of books that get read. So have a plan and apply simple business management to it.
You know, what's so important, management, because really that's what it is. And this is a business. Once this book is written and it's out there, it's actually a business. It really is. You had earlier, we talked about commitment. And, you know, we talk about the fear of commitment. How were you able to get through a lot of your fears when you were writing the book, not only the commitment, but other fears?
I had the attitude up front that I wanted to produce this, that, and the motivation initially for me was not around making money off of it. The motivation for me was putting a model out there that local government could use that would benefit the communities, that would benefit the taxpayers at a huge level. And that was my reason for engaging in this book was, you know, what I've got here works, and people ought to understand it, because what we do in government and certainly in policing at times is highly inefficient and highly ineffective. And so the motivation was to put forth a management level model that could be applied in literally anything in local government. And as we found out, it can be applied in the private sector as well. And provide the taxpayer, provide the community with something something profound. And to me, it became about ROI, which return on investment, which is another business principle, is as the police chief, that the community is investing millions of its tax dollars in us to provide public safety, and yet a lot of the returns on that investment aren't real high. And so what we wanted to do was put a management level model out there that maximized organizational efficiency, effectiveness, accountability, and put in place performance measurements that actually meant something.
All right, Bill, let's fast forward a little bit and talk about that moment, you know, after the truck leaves your driveway and you've got a couple pallets of books. What type of marketing plan starts to kick in, and how do you execute that?
That's where we got the wide-eyed look, because when the books showed up, we had these cases and cases of books, and you open it up, and you're so happy, you're so proud, here it is. And then my wife Patty and I, we looked at each other and said, okay, now what do we do? And we did have a marketing strategy. We put together a plan for how we were going to market this. Who were our top four target audiences, and how were we going to get the book out to them? How were we going to manage the resources that came in? How do we set up the business behind publishing? How do we set up the distribution networks? And who is going to be the recipient of our marketing strategy? So we set out the top four target markets that we wanted. Part of that market, we deliberately made not to be local government. We made it public libraries and colleges and universities. And we went to the public library route for a couple reasons. One is that the book should be in there. And secondarily is if the book is marketed appropriately, there's 3,700 libraries in the United States, and libraries buy books. If they buy your book, if it's properly marketed and they buy your book, that's a revenue generator. So what we had to do then was look at, we had to do a break-even analysis. What level of, what number of books are we going to have to sell in order to break even for the investment we made financially? And so one of the marketing strategies was deliberately designed to be a revenue generator. The others were designed to go out there and look at producing outcomes in a longer-term level.
Great. Yeah, that makes complete sense. Now, my other question to you, which is one that I had to answer recently, was, you know, you've done all this work, learned all your lessons, and now you've actually created a capacity to publish books. Do you see yourself, you know, branching out and finding other people that are working on the same area you are, or what do you see as coming next?
Actually, we've talked about that. I've been pinged by two or three different people that have asked if I would publish their books. I'm probably not going to go into the book publishing market, but for certain people I would, simply because it is has a tendency to be such an onerous process. We learned it, we know how to do it, and as a consequence, we can help other people. So I don't see myself going into the book publishing business, but I would help some people if they came along and they were really struggling. I'd be very, very happy and actually honored to help some folks along with it, because we know how to do it now.
And you became an expert, didn't you, in that? You had mentioned earlier in part of what you were talking about is the importance of becoming an expert and creating, I'm going to take this a little bit further, in creating a platform. What platform are you using?
I actually am using a multifaceted platform, and once you publish your book, you become a de facto expert. You are the expert. Well, that wasn't the design. I had been teaching graduate school MBA classes for years. I had been teaching police officers around the country for years. So what I wanted to do was take this book and use it in the platforms I already had, college courses, community college courses, speaking engagements that I do, and certainly teaching management courses to local law enforcement around the country. Is those platforms already existed for me, so I was able to facilitate the book that way. And what I do is provide people the ability when I go speak to buy the book. So it becomes a revenue generator, but that also becomes a legacy in and of itself because it gets your word out. So depending on your genre, you become, when the book goes out, you become an expert in whatever field that is. People will solicit you. People will come and ask you to come and speak. A lot of people don't. They should. A lot of people don't because there's a real opportunity there not only to enhance your visibility in your business but to enhance the ability to put your word out there, especially in a business, in a nonfiction type world. Huge opportunities are out there. So I really encourage people to go out the speaking way or to go in and teach or lecture because there's real huge opportunities out there for people to do that. And it's a business. So you're not only pushing your word out forward, but you're generating business as well. And as I found with my book, I was just in Atlanta a couple weeks ago doing a presentation for a whole bunch of CIOs. And I'm getting more and more of these things because the book has actually gotten traction now, and it's getting more and more visibility. The more visibility you get, the more visibility you get. And so I really, truly encourage people because once your book is out there, you really do become the expert, and people want to hear from you.
You know, isn't that true? Before you write a book, you could be just a person. You write a book, you become an author, and then you become an expert. And actually, writers, authors really need to take this to their advantage and produce a book so that they can become an expert. This is sometimes the only way that you can become an expert, is by having, you know, by authoring a book.
And there's two ways people can go when they author a book. They can go the business route that we're talking about, or if you're not interested in going the business route, going the lecture, going the speaking circuit, going the training circuit, is that leaves you with the ability to go out there and write the book and put it out into the public or put it into the particular audience because you want to do it. And it becomes a gift then to society or whatever element of society you're targeting. And so that then becomes a gift as opposed to going out and doing it as a business.
Exactly. And also it's a word of mouth because the more you're out there speaking, lecturing, talking, signing, you get people excited. You get people wanting to know more, needing to know more, and so they tell other people, and of course that produces more sales.
It does, and mm-hmm. one of the key elements out here that I found that I really haven't really gotten over at this point, even after a year, is when I go lecture, or speak, or train, people buy the book. They want you to sign it. And I sit there and I autograph books, and I'm thinking, who the heck am I autographing books? But I'll tell you, people really love that, and it really is a sense of accomplishment because I never sat down and figured that I'd be out there autographing books. But what a sense of accomplishment, and people actually believe that.
Yes. I mean, an autographed book, this is big. This is big. Well, gosh, Bill, you know, we could go on and on and on because I know that you have so much to share. Just remind our audience what your how they can get a hold of you, your website.
My website is www.leadingbeyondtradition.com. My phone number is 425-275-7665. And they can get a hold of us on either one of those.
That sounds great. Thank you so much, Bill. And I know that you've given our budding authors so much information, a lot to think about, and we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I'm honored, and thanks, Irene. Thanks, Victor. And I would put out there also that if folks have questions or they're struggling a bit, get a hold of me. I'm happy to help.
Okay, you've been listening to another edition of Authors Access Live, where authors get published and published authors get successful. You can hear us approximately every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on InternetVoicesRadio.com. Next week's topic is Understanding the Basic Elements of a Story, and our special guest will be joining us is Joan Neubauer of WordWrite.biz. You can learn more about our guests, past and present, on Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson of Austin, Texas, signing off.
For Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Volkman from Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.
Thank you very much for listening to Passionate Internet Voices Talk Radio. You've just listened to Victor Volkman and Irene Watson and Author Access. If you would like to listen to this program all over again, please go to http://internetvoicesradio.com. Thank you very much for listening. Our next program is scheduled to begin at 10 o'clock this evening with Janet Smith in Let's Speak Spanish. And then rounding up the evening is Jacqueline Sue from the Banks of the Mainstream from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. Thank you very much for listening. Until those two programs come on, you'll be listening to pre-recorded programs. Thank you and have a good evening. Good night.